snap mines, Israeli soldiers kill a 15-year-old Palestinian boy in the occupied West Bank. Yemen's Ansar movement denounces new U.S. sanctions against the group, saying they are an extension to a systematic plan to destroy the Yemeni economy. China urges the United States and Russia to further cut their nuclear arsenals. Hello and welcome, everybody. Palestinian Red Crescent says Israeli troops have killed a Palestinian teenager during clashes with protesters in the occupied West Bank. 15-year-old Mohammed Said was shot dead in the village of Beita, south of Nablus. The Palestinian Health Ministry says six other protesters were also injured as Israeli troops fired live rounds and tear gas at them. The demonstrators had gathered in Beita to voice their anger at the construction of new settler units near the village. They set fire to tires and hurled stones at Israeli forces. Tensions have been running high in the occupied territories for months over Israel's settlement activities, as well as the regime's planned evictions of Palestinians from their homes. All Israeli settlements are illegal under international law. Yemen's Ansar Allah movement has denounced new U.S. sanctions against the group as a new crime against the Yemeni nation. A member of the Supreme Political Council of Yemen said the United States is putting the war option as its first priority while pretending to seek peace. Muhammad Ali al-Houthi said imposing sanctions to bring peace will lead to nowhere. He stressed that the new measures are an extension to a systematic plan aimed at destroying Yemen's economy. The U.S. announced its new sanctions against Ansar Allah on Thursday. Secretary of State Antony Blinken said the U.S. will continue to exert pressure on Ansar Allah to make it end their offensive in Ma'arib. Ansar Allah and its allied army units are engaged in a battle to liberate the city from the Saudi-backed forces. Well, a United Nations expert has called on the United Arab Emirates to immediately release five imprisoned human rights activists. Mary Lawler described their sentences as excessively severe. The five activists are part of a group of 94 lawyers, human rights defenders, and academics who were sentenced to 10 years in prison in July 2013 for allegedly plotting to overthrow the UAE regime. Lawler expressed concern that they have been subjected to torture by being held in solitary confinement for long periods. She said their right to a fair trial may also have been violated as they were denied or given limited access to legal counsel. UN Special Rapporteur on the Situation of Human Rights Defenders stressed that they should have never been detained in the first place for legitimately exercising their freedoms. The Chinese Foreign Minister has called on the U.S. and Russia to further reduce their nuclear arsenals. Addressing the conference on disarmament, Wang Yi said fresh cuts by the two countries would contribute to multilateral nuclear disarmament. He also implicitly criticized the U.S. for developing and deploying missile systems that undermine strategic stability. Wang also pointed to the ongoing talks to restore the 2015 Iran nuclear deal. He said the U.S. must remove sanctions on Iran first, and this is the natural thing to do for the revival of the agreement. The top Chinese diplomat stressed that U.S. unilateral bullying acts were the root cause of the standoff over Iran's nuclear program. Well, we're going to go back to our top story. The Palestinian Red Crescent has said Israeli troops have killed a Palestinian teenager during clashes with protesters in the occupied West Bank. Palestinian scientist and author Mazen Rumsia joins us now from Bethlehem. Mr. Rumsia, welcome to the program. Please give us your thoughts on the recent escalation of violence being carried out by the Israeli regime.
Well, thank you very much for hosting me and for doing such wonderful shows. I have been always looking at the way the Israeli government mind works, and it seems to be always probing to do the most damage with the least kind of repercussions. So when Netanyahu attacked Al-Aqsa Mosque and started this latest uprising and prevented worshippers from getting to the third holiest site in Islam, he had calculated some reaction which would help him in his elections or in forming a government, but he didn't actually expect the kind of reaction that happened. And I look at the latest escalations in the same context, that the Israeli government kind of probes the situation. So, for example, they killed three Palestinians in one attack on a Palestinian police station, actually, internal security, two policemen and one inmate, in an exchange of gunfire. This is contrary to the Oslo Accords and contrary to the agreements reached with the U.S. and also the agreements reached informally with Hamas on reducing tensions. But anyways, and then they continue to unleash their settlers on attacks on holy sites. And in this case, in Beita, for example, settlers trying to take over the land of this village. Then when the villagers demonstrated, they used live ammunition, excessive forces against unarmed demonstrators. And this resulted in the death of a 15-year-old Mohammed Saeed, plus the injury of several Palestinians from that village.
All right. Thanks a lot. Palestinian scientist and author Mazen Qomsia joining us from Bethlehem. Well, we have some election news from the upcoming presidential election here in Iran. We're going to cross over to my colleagues with the latest.
Well, welcome to another edition of Election Special. Thank you for joining us. With just a week to go before Iran's presidential election, candidates are outlining their plans in an effort to secure enough votes to win the race for the country's top executive post. The candidates' plans range from pledging more jobs to creating an environment conducive to bring significant changes to the country's banking system. Let's take a look at some of those plans. Iran's presidential candidate, Abdul Nasser Hemati, has criticized some limitations that have been put on women and young people as meaningless. He said the youth are not happy with the current situation because there is too much pressure on them. Hemati said some fundamental changes are needed, adding that he has plans to do so in order to witness more active presence of the young people in the social and economic fields. The presidential hopeful also slammed the sanctions imposed on Iran as cruel that have affected people's livelihoods. Here's more.
People's livelihoods have been affected by cruel sanctions and unfortunately by actions of some groups that always undermine the measures. Sanctions have inured heavy losses and disrupted our sources of income. Some people belittle FATF, but I think it is very important. We, along with one or two countries, have been exempted from having financial transactions with the rest of the world. The whole world is based on banking and financial transactions. Our exports have been disrupted, and our transaction costs have increased too much. All these are impacting the country's economy to a great extent.
Ebrahim Raisi says producing as many as 2 million cars in 1 year is feasible. Raisi says he opposes monopoly in car industry, adding that this has become an issue and concern amongst people and has to be tackled as soon as possible. The presidential candidate said his future administration will strive to control prices of cars and at the same time boost their quality. He said his government will take measures to make Iran's car industry totally independent. Alireza Zalkani says Iran's banking system has been subject to some mismanagement, especially during the current administration. The banking system is literally out of work and it is imposing its problems on the country, he said. Zalkani added he would integrate the country's banking system if elected president. Regarding women, the 55-year-old candidate pledged to provide necessary support for women so that they can play their role in education and training the country's new generation. Let's take a listen.
And The Islamic Revolution created opportunities that helped women play important roles in society. It basically brought up a new approach. There's a big difference between how women are now viewed in Iran and the approach to them in Western states. The West views everything and everyone based on economic principles, and that includes women. But from the viewpoint of Islam, culture is the main principle of society, economy, and politics. So a culture-based society makes women the most important factor in education and training of their children. This also highlights the importance of women in playing a leading and pivotal role in families. That's why women need more support to have an active role.
All right, let's move on to the next presidential candidate, Saeed Jalili. He says he will create as many as 4 million jobs if elected. The 55-year-old candidate says one of the country's major issues is unemployment, adding that a young person spends 10 years of his life studying, but he struggles to find a job after being graduated. Jalili said his future administration has multiple plans to tackle unemployment. Jalili, who has also served as the country's top nuclear negotiator, said he also plans to address industry, tourism, and fishing issues. Iran's presidential hopeful, Mohsen Rezaei, says he will make policy to deal with neighboring countries seriously if elected to office. He said there are differences in ideas with neighbors that should be resolved. Rezaei said his government will be pioneer in resolving issues depending on the will of the neighboring countries. The presidential candidate also said he would activate the national economy regardless of the outcome of Vienna talks aimed at reviving the 2015 nuclear deal.
Our government will remain committed to all international obligations. The JCPOA is an international commitment that was violated by the U.S., but we will remain committed to the deal. It is important to force the U.S. to fulfill its commitments. We will pursue right diplomacy, but we will not be waiting for any agreement in Vienna. By reactivating national economy, we will minimize our independence on the U.S. as much as possible. They should feel that the more time they waste, the more they will lose. We will start boosting our national production, and they are the ones who would be following us.
Another candidate is Mohsen Mehralizadeh. He says he is against monopoly regarding car production. He also says he is against monopoly in importing cars from other countries. Mehralizadeh says he has plans to improve the country's national car industry, which dates back to some 60 years ago. The 64-year-old candidate says he will put tariffs on imported cars in an effort to control the market and manage prices. He also said he will pursue the policy of making the car market a competitive one so the domestic car industry can flourish. Now, last but not least, presidential candidate Amir Hossein Ghazizadeh Hashemi. Addressing reporters on Friday, Ghazizadeh Hashemi said the election fever is starting to run high as people are weighing up who can run the country for the next 4 years. He expressed hope that the turnout will be huge on the election day. On Thursday, he briefly outlined his plans for different provinces. He said each city needs to be able to offer services similar to those being offered in the capital. Ghazizadeh Hashemi also made some comments regarding diplomacy, saying that the foreign policy must be mainly focused on the economy. Here's more.
It is very important for the governments to have plans for each province, aside from those for the country as a whole. My government's provincial plans include assigning greater responsibilities to local governors. We have a model based on which all of our cities will be similar to Tehran, and therefore people would not need to travel to the capital for particular services. We also want diplomacy for the economy and nothing else. The foreign ministry is most valuable to us when it manages to pave the way for economic exchanges with other countries.
As election day approaches in Iran, presidential candidates intensify their campaigns so that they can woo more voters. This year, most of the campaigns are conducted and aired on state media in the wake of the coronavirus pandemic, but candidates are allowed to hold physical electoral campaigns with limited numbers. Our correspondent Yusuf Jalali has filed this report.
The June 18th presidential vote draws to a close in Iran, and candidates are on a tight schedule, trying to make the best of the remaining time to attract more public support. In addition to televised campaigns, candidates now visit universities and other key places to increase their popularity among people from different walks of life.
When I make a promise, I'll give you a clear roadmap that shows every step of my plan. For example, if I promise to solve the issue of housing, I will give you the exact timeline of the procedure and the number of houses that I will build for the people who don't have a house.
We try to analyze the current state of affairs in Iran and create plans that are based on real circumstances of our society. We concluded that we could make tangible changes based on our plans.
All of the seven contenders have rich executive backgrounds, from sitting atop the judicial branch to running the Central Bank of Iran. But perhaps their past plays the least part in winning the race, since it's what they plan for the future that matters to voters.
I have a special plans regarding the exchange market. I believe that the capital market plays a significant role in financing the country's industries.
If I took office, I would eliminate the coronavirus once and for all within less than 6 months. I also have comprehensive health policies that would reduce the costs significantly for patients.
We do have plans, but we cannot break them down to their details during a limited time of campaigns. God willing, if I'm elected president, I will operate those plans.
Aside from electoral campaigns, which are mostly held in the form of televised addresses, the candidates face off in live debates. So far, the seven runners have attended two televised debates. The first was themed with economy, and the second centered on social affairs. The third and final showdown is slated for June 12th. Unlike previous rounds where the elections were more of a clash of the parties, this time it's a race of plans. Plans that can ensure a better economy and a brighter future for Iranians. Yusuf Jalali, Tehran.
Well, that's a wrap for now. Thanks for tuning in. We'll see you next time.
Thank you, Omid. And with that, it brings us to an end here on this edition of the World News by Rumi.
Diverse range of programs. Spirituality. Youth. Eastern Tales. Roundtable discussions. Culture. Politics. All produced by IRIB English Radio.
The limelight.
The Israeli regime has a history of attacking Palestinian arts and culture. In 2018, for example, the Israeli regime bombed the Said al-Mishal Culture Center, says Ruwaida Amer, journalist, in an article titled, "Why did the Israeli regime bomb bookstores?" Stay tuned, please, for the details of this article. Amir Mansour spent more than 20 years developing a haven for readers in Gaza City. An estimated 100,000 books could be found in his library. Located near three universities, it was a vital resource for large numbers of students. The haven was destroyed swiftly and brutally during the Zionist regime's latest major attack on Gaza. Today, a sign with a defined message has been placed outside the remains of Kohel Building, where Mansour ran his library, bookstore, and publishing firm. The sign notes that books are the source of knowledge and help to shape people's identity. The ideas contained in books cannot be erased by bombs and warplanes. They will live on. "This library is my whole life," said Mansour. "I was shocked when the Israeli occupation decided to bomb the building. It felt like I myself had been destroyed." "The library benefits all members of society," he added. "It is an independent library that has nothing to do with politics. I did not expect for a moment that it would be bombed in this way. This means that the Israeli regime wants to destroy our identity and culture in Gaza. It's shameful," he added. Mariam Riaz, a history student at Al-Aqsa University in Gaza, described the library as a constant companion. "There is no student at our university who hasn't been in this library," she said. "It was both beautiful and useful. I have so many memories from there." Khaled Omar, an engineering student at Al-Azhar University, immersed himself in literature thanks to the library. "I would borrow a novel or a collection of poetry," he said, "and I would absorb these books. When I saw thousands of books destroyed and lying on the ground, I felt that my own heart had been destroyed. The Israeli regime does not respect books and culture. That's why it has bombed a library." As well as running the library and bookstore, Mansour's firm published books by local authors. The firm worked with more than 150 writers, as well as publishing translations of European literature. Mansour has calculated that he lost at least $700,000 worth of books and equipment as a result of the bombing. Another bookstore owned by Shaban Aslim was destroyed during last month's offensive against Gaza. The Israeli regime has a history of attacking Palestinian arts and culture. In 2018, for example, the Zionist regime bombed the Said Mishal Cultural Center. That five-story building hosted Gaza's main theater, as well as other classes, poetry readings, and exhibitions. During last month's attack, the Zionist regime also bombed the Ghazi Shawa building hosting the Gaza offices of Open Screenplay. A Canadian firm, Open Screenplay, has developed technology to assist budding movie writers. While none of Open Screenplay's staff were harmed, the firm reported that at least four people were killed when the building was bombed. Another facility attacked by the Israeli regime was the recording studio Masharek. It was in that studio that the popular singer Mohammed Asif, best known for winning the TV contest Arab Idol, made his first recordings. The Basma Society for Culture and Arts, which offers drama programs for children and women, was damaged too. The bombing of Samir Mansour's project has caused a widespread revulsion. Palestinians in Sheikh Jarrah neighborhood of occupied East Al-Quds quickly demonstrated their support for Mansour by opening a bookstore named in his honor. The act of solidarity is poignant given that Sheikh Jarrah has become synonymous with ongoing efforts by the Zionist regime to force Palestinians out of their homes. Muhammad al-Sharif from Gaza's Culture Ministry noted that Samir Mansour's library was one of 44 cultural institutions destroyed or damaged by the Israeli regime last month. More than $3 million worth of damage was inflicted on Gaza's cultural sector, the ministry has calculated. The Israeli regime believes that destroying our cultural institutions will make us forget our cause, al-Sharif said, adding, "But that will not happen. We will keep on reading."
Join us in this journey. IRIB English Radio.
Please log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
Iran Today.
The biggest concern with most Iranians at the moment is to put bread on the table and the possibility of once again planning a future. That is what they expect of the future president. It would make for their criteria for voting. Iran's to elect itself a new president and top politician in less than 2 weeks. But it appears any of the seven candidates getting in will find his main challenge to be economic rather than political. For a look into Iran's multifaceted economy, economic challenges and possible solutions, stay with me, Leila Faramarzi, on Iran Today. Whatever plans the different candidates have for different economic issues would make or break them in the presidential race. Issues are inflation, poverty, unemployment, and skyrocketing prices for basic household goods. Principalists or conservatives blame problems on the Rouhani administration's looking to the West to solve the country's economic woes. The question today is what will they, the candidates, bring to the table? Dr. Shaghoghi is Dean of Khwarazmi University's Faculty of Economy. He came to share his views with us at Press TV Studios.
Any cabinet that will take office would face these problems and challenges which have escalated compared to the previous decade. As time passes by, the problems worsen. Another point to mention is that all the think tanks are predicting by 2030 no country would buy oil. This means an end to the oil exports era.
Dr. Raghfar is an economist teaching at Al Zahra University, where we met him. He mentions the main reason for a high inflation rate.
The main reason behind the rise of inflation in Iran is what's called the costs push, which is mainly caused by currency manipulation. Iran's inflation has ranged somewhere about 14 to 15% when there haven't been wide fluctuations in the value of our national currency. But in the past 8 years, the inflation in Iran averaged 24%. The highest inflation level was recorded last year at 50%. It was mainly caused by the devaluation of the national currency, as I just mentioned.
Hassan Rouhani didn't inherit a bed of roses when he started out as president in 2013. International sanctions had been tightened in 2011, and inflation was at over 30%. And there appeared no way out but to negotiate a deal with the world's economic powers. That would be the JCPOA or Iran nuclear deal with the P5 plus one, the US, UK, France, Russia, China, and Germany. They would lift the UN's nuclear-related economic sanctions off this country in return for Iran limiting its peaceful nuclear program. The US pulled out, however, in 2018 and made things worse for this country.
The 11th government took office with a promise to solve Iran's nuclear-related issues, lift sanctions, and improve the country's international ties. But the nuclear negotiations that were expected to be wrapped up fast took about 2 to 2.5 years to conclude. Even after the JCPOA was reached, several issues, including banking relations, were left unsolved. The government put all its eggs in the basket of the nuclear deal.
Although it may not be tangible, the Rouhani government is said to have kept the economy afloat when it could have actually drowned by U.S. sanctions, the oil revenues frozen abroad, and the COVID-19 pandemic. Not sure our Dr. Raghfar agrees.
It appears to me that we have all the resources to fund the public sector, but there isn't a political will to get that done. The fact that the government hasn't turned to taxes and that Iran's tax system is flawed and inefficient depends on how much they fit the interests of the decision makers.
Now, Iran's problem is indeed also corruption and mismanagement, not just external sanctions. Whatever weakness or malice and vice the government may have, it is not the ultimate force in the country to carry all the blame. The government needs tax revenues it cannot extract from the most powerful institutions or invisible incomes. It attempted selling bonds for public companies and enterprises, but those basically didn't land in the palms of actual private companies and investors who get the industry running and so create jobs. Dr. Hakhshanas is a prominent economist who was, for his tireless capability, appointed governor of Golestan province when floods swept over the country in 2019. He joined us on Skype.
What the incumbent administration did was, instead of borrowing from the central bank and injecting stronger money into the economy, it attempted to address the budget deficit by selling treasury bills or other securities worth 200 trillion tumans. If the government didn't take this initiative, Iran's economy could sink into hyperinflation, as many experts were predicting following Donald Trump's withdrawal from the JCPOA in 2018.
Plenty of solutions suggested by economists, but do any plans and ideas put forth by presidential candidates read with those solutions to economic woes? Let's hear it from an expert. Have you seen any concrete economic plans by the presidential candidates?
I haven't seen any candidate with a comprehensive plan so far. I don't know if they have a plan, but they are yet to publish their agenda through the media or on their websites. The plans have to incorporate the priorities including those for reforms, operations, how to address major challenges, their quantifiable goals, approaches and strategies. You see, a team of doctors must have a plan that identifies the challenges facing the patient, prioritize which ones to address first, and determines the necessary treatment.
It's come to that time when any guess as to who the next president is can be second-guessed, when the expected outcome can make a U-turn. That's because electoral debates are underway. The first round was on Saturday, the 5th of June, and that was the economic round, when candidates could have recreated their destinies. Overall, the debate between the seven candidates wasn't impressive. Although the seven were to respond to predetermined questions, they basically seized the opportunity to respond to criticisms and attack one another and the outgoing Rouhani administration, or to promote their own plans.
We need to do things like levying taxes on non-productive jobs and at the same time reducing taxes on producers.
When we carefully studied the matters, we realized that the government's relationship with the economy and the economies with the people haven't been adjusted. Whenever the government faces a problem, it delves into the pockets of the people.
Dear Iranians, your economic conditions can be improved a lot, but that necessitates reforms that the other candidates can't make. But I have the plan and the ability to do so, dear people.
Unfortunately, in our country, the relevant authorities have become responsible for the protection of foreign currency instead of being responsible for protecting the value of the national currency.
Statistics show that almost 50% of people live below the poverty line. This doesn't befit the honorable people of Iran, that 7 million heads of households don't earn a fixed income and need direct assistance to make a living.
The volume of liquidity is more than 3,500 trillion tomans. This is brought about by banks producing money without the supervision of the central bank, creating super debtors. Currently, there are 11 super debtors who owe the economy 90 trillion tomans.
Before making plans to fight poverty, you need to ensure that you have the attitude for it. Do you have what it takes to fight poverty? One of the problems we have had over the past years has been that the people and the underprivileged haven't been the priority.
But for the better part, the debate circled around criticizing the present government's policies and Abdel Nasser Hemmati's efficiency when chief of the CBI, Central Bank of Iran.
Dear Mr. Hemmati, you have sources to make kingpins for steel, sugar, and cooking oil, but you don't have resources to help the poor. He has destroyed the national currency. Now he's talking about the distribution of poverty. You have distributed poverty.
For instance, Mr. Hemmati said why the FATF hasn't been approved, claiming that you know so much about the issue is why the economy is in the condition it is right now.
Hemmati, for his part, tried to exempt himself from the government's policies, saying Hassan Rouhani lacked economic vision.
First of all, let me say at the outset that I'm not Mr. Rouhani's representative. I was set aside from the central bank because of disagreements I had with Mr. Rouhani. He had the same problem you do. He didn't have economic insight. I urge everyone to consider this. Mr. Raisi said two groups of economists can comment. But if you don't have economic insight, which group do you listen to? It's an issue that's been solved everywhere in the world. Anyone who makes economic decisions must have economic insight.
I asked how Hemmati had won the reputation with many of having kept the inflation and decline of the rial under check against all odds. The many don't include our economist.
In an 8-year period, when Iran saw war, occupation, political coup, and other turning points, only once the national currency fell sixfold. That happened in a 3-year period when Mr. Hemmati was in charge.
Mohsen Mehralizadeh praised the 8-year performance of the Khatami government, calling his own policies a continuation of that reforms government.
People of Iran, all the statistics and political, social and historical indicators are a testament to the fact that one government managed to advance the country appropriately toward development by moving slowly, steadily and logically. That was the reformist government of Sayyid Mohammad Khatami.
As for Saeed Jalili and Amir Hossein Ghazizadeh Hashemi, those were the two candidates that focused on introducing their own plans more than the others did. This means they spent less time on attacking fellow candidates.
You need to be able to create jobs, not add employees. This means that your agricultural sector should be able to do this. We checked how much work can be done in the petro-refinery sector, petrochemical, oil and gas projects, and energy consumption optimization. Also in agriculture, fisheries, farms, animal husbandry, and etc. We have transformative plans for each of these.
We've been making plans with the help of revolutionary youth over the past 3 years under the title of Salam Government. I can address the production barriers, structural budgeting, non-repayment of debts, bank debtors, and tax issues.
In saying why he wanted to leave the judiciary for the executive, Mr. Raisi highlighted his fight against corruption, the source of which he said was mostly the executive, which he wants to reconstruct.
During my tenure in the judiciary, I faced numerous cases which are traced back to the executive branch of the government. I mean legal cases of corruption and economic rents. We investigate these cases with a steady perseverance. People know well that I know no borders in dealing with corruption cases, and it's been proved to them that I'm not all talk. I'm a man of my words. It's a key point that today we need to promptly deal with and correct the branch of the government which is producing such cases.
We popped out to see what people on the street were thinking, how attractive they found the candidates and their mottos. We also asked people whether they associated economic problems with sanctions or domestic mismanagement.
The point is that sanctions have become an excuse for mismanagement inside the country. If they select qualified managers with relevant knowledge and expertise to the area of their activity, we won't have the problems that we have today in the country.
I wish there were more severe laws against presidents who simply forget about their campaign slogans as soon as they win the elections. That's my personal idea, though, because in that case, they will stay in office for 4 or 8 years and just exacerbate the problems.
For me, who is grappling with problems of life every single day, baseless slogans won't do any good. In fact, we've been able to find ways around the sanctions, but unfortunately, mismanagement is still prevalent throughout the country.
Sanctions will not always be like this. Things will work out. Actually, we need to find a way to cope with mismanagement.
Pressure of sanctions is undeniable, but still the country enjoys enough potentials to flourish. The fact of the matter is that we've heard loads of these slogans since many years ago, but it's not enough. A tongue doesn't get things done.
The Rouhani administration is pushing to get the U.S. to consent to its demands for sanctions relief before it goes out. After all, it signed the JCPOA in 2015, and it should see that deal's revival through. Before the 2018 U.S. pullout, the Rouhani government even brought the inflation down to around 10% from double that, and kept it that way for 2 years till 2017. But with problems that mounted since 2018, it has attempted solutions that have themselves become problems. For example, to compensate lost oil and other revenues, it minted unbacked money, which it put into the government fund. Printing extra money caused its local currency, the rial, to fall rapidly, fueling inflation.
The reason for the rise in foreign currency prices is the outflow of the currency from the country. In the past few years, the economic policies have led to large amounts of currencies leaving Iran, a major part of which hasn't returned. The foreign currencies have been spent to import goods, but not only the goods haven't been brought in, but the money has also been frozen abroad. Much of our export didn't bring in any revenue for the country. Our money was blocked abroad under the pretext of sanctions.
Thanks for your attention thus far. Plenty more coming up. But let's make a quick diversion for a media review in the meantime to see what other outlets have to say. Here it is in words. The BBC reads, Iran's presidential election, four ways it matters, with a look at inflation and high prices. The economy has always played a key role in the Iranian elections, and it is high on the agenda of every candidate. Due to the precarious economic situation, Iran is now in one of its most critical phases since the 1979 revolution. The impact of sanctions exacerbated by the coronavirus pandemic has caused one of the worst economic crises in the country's history, with the inflation rate reaching 50%. When the government arbitrarily increased the price of petrol in November 2019, thousands of people took to the streets in more than 100 cities. Although some believe that radical change is necessary and only possible through protests and strikes, there are those who believe that gradual change is more peaceful and feasible through the ballot box. To save the economy is to strengthen manufacture. Tasnim News quotes the leader, Islamic Republic grown stronger than ever. The leader of the Islamic Revolution, in a live televised speech on the anniversary of Imam Khomeini's demise, emphasized that the key to the Islamic Republic's permanency is in the two words Islamic and Republic. In describing participation in the elections and making a well-informed choice as being the way to solve economic problems, Imam Khamenei added, everyone should consider himself to be responsible for encouraging others to participate, and he or she must participate as well. He stated that participation in the elections is a manifestation of the holy verse, most surely man is in loss, except those who believe and do good, and enjoin on each other truth, and enjoin on each other patience. In saying that the way to save the economy of the country is to strengthen domestic production, the leader of the Islamic Revolution explained, presidential candidates should be committed to combating corruption, strengthening domestic production, and fighting smuggling and unnecessary imports. They must state this commitment today, so that if they do not do this after winning, the supervisory bodies may take them to account. The Financial Tribune counts five major challenges facing Iran's economy. As the seven certified candidates are heading for the June 18th presidential election, Masoud Khansari, the head of Tehran Chamber of Commerce, Industries, Mines and Agriculture, draws their attention to the main challenges facing Iran's economy. When it comes to economy, everything is reduced to livelihood. This is while the livelihood crises arise from underlying macroeconomic factors. The new government should know that Iran's economy is facing five major challenges, which, if neglected, will bring the country's development to a standstill. He was quoted as saying by the Persian economic daily Donya-e-Ikhtesad. Khansari believes that the next president must have a precise understanding of inflation and its dynamics, causes of capital flight, negative investment growth, reasons behind brain drain, necessity of reforming budget structure, banking problems, insurance, customs, and social security reform, the complex system of sanctions, and the real potential of Iran's economy. Well, that would be it for this segment. Do stay with us. To look at major economic challenges separately, I'll begin with inflation. Or rather, I'll make a second attempt at detailing, beginning with inflation. Inflation has reached annoying levels, such that commodity prices are not exactly stable. They are constantly changing, in fact. It picked up steam in 2018 with the U.S. unilateral pullout and its reimpositioning of U.N. sanctions as U.S. sanctions, as well as reinforcing and adding to those. Iran has faced the toughest ever sanctions on oil exports and banking since. Unemployment is always top of the list, with breadwinners thinking to vote or not to vote, and for who. To aim for the root of the problem, the root must first be identified. Negative GDP growth due to various problems such as mismanagement, incorrect privatizations, and sanctions has led to the closure of some industries. This, in turn, has led to an increase in unemployment.
Currencies go up so much. Anyone intending to invest would need huge resources to start even a small business. And what the business returns, considering the large amount of investment, taxes, transaction costs, and others, isn't cost-effective at all. That's why we're witnessing unemployment in the country.
If unemployment means a lack of honest jobs, it makes for more alternative ways of putting food on the table. One of the drawbacks of rising unemployment and inflation, as well as sanctions and economic shrinking, is the spread of smuggling, for which it remains to be seen what solutions candidates have.
If the economy is transparent in terms of imports and exports to and from the region, it can certainly reduce smuggling. Smuggling occurs when prices are not realistic. Gasoline is smuggled abroad because it's cheap here and expensive there. It's because the price isn't reasonable. Similarly, home appliances are smuggled inside because they are cheaper abroad.
Sanctions have not brought Iran down. They can't put down a country this resourceful that easily, but they have taken their toll. Sanctions and monopolized revenues have meant the governments have had to make some bad or badder decisions, or decisions with limited usefulness. One of those choices is direct subsidies.
We should frankly admit that people's livelihoods are being threatened. We also need to say that the current conditions have been both caused by the coronavirus pandemic and the sanctions that have impacted all the country's banking and commerce for the past 3 years. This economic condition is a result of those challenges. People are under pressure, but we shouldn't forget the causes.
As corona became a big problem too, the Iranian economy entered a third consecutive year of recession, following the triple shock of sanctions, oil market collapse, and the coronavirus, COVID-19. In response, the authorities unveiled new rounds of cash transfers and consumption loans for lower-income deciles and households without a permanent source of income. Now, COVID-19 healthcare costs and social assistance transfers are forecast to add to the government's expenditure growth. It's noteworthy cash transfers alone would be insufficient because a rising inflation will mean a reducing real value of those distributed cash transfers. Any sustainability of measures for economic recovery would ultimately depend on reforms, reforms that address the country's structural challenges. One of the structural problems of Iran's economy has been its reliance on oil export revenues. In recent years, the government was blessed by having to reduce its reliance of the public budget on oil economy due to external pressures, due to sanctions, that is. With electoral debates going on, question is, what do candidates plan to do to further reduce this reliance on oil? That's it for today. Thanks from the whole team. But do remember, election day is 18th June, and the story is ongoing till then, continually, with special editions as well. Bye for now.
This is the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran's broadcasting. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily from 1920 to 2020 UTC on the following frequencies. 31 meters, 9,855 kilohertz for Europe, and 31 meters, 9,835 kilohertz for Southern Africa, and FM 91.5 megahertz for Tehran. You can also listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Hotbird, Eutelsat 3B, and IranSat or Badr 5, and via internet. Our internet address is parstoday.com/en. And now you can listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details.
This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.